This is Childhood Matters, presented by Interactive Parenting Media.
Childhood Matters.
For parents and everyone else who cares for or about kids.
We are family. Get up, everybody, and sing.
Here's your host, Rona Renner.
Good morning and welcome to Childhood Matters. Today we'll address what parents and teachers can do to help children with ADHD and learning disabilities thrive. When I was teaching classes for parents of kids with attention and learning problems at Kaiser, the school environment was always a subject that was riddled with frustration, concern, and a lot of confusion. Parents often didn't get the information or the support they needed. Teachers frequently felt that they were lacking in training and resources, and students bore the brunt of being in an environment that didn't take their neurodiversity into consideration. School failure comes easily when a child feels they're stupid or bad or incompetent. I know, because when I struggled in school with my unrecognized learning disabilities, no one knew, including myself, what I needed. I learned to smile a lot and get answers from the smart kids and beg my teachers to pass me. I skipped a grade because of my IQ, but because of my short-term memory problems and dyslexia, I couldn't do well on tests. I couldn't understand why it was hard to remember things or read or learn a new language. I'm Nurse Rona, and I'm here each week to present important topics to parents, grandparents, foster parents, childcare providers, big sisters, big brothers, or anyone who cares for and about children. Today, we have two great guests with us to tackle some of the issues around school and home environments to help kids who are diagnosed with a learning difference or attention deficit disorder, or perhaps your child who isn't impaired enough to get help or a diagnosis, but who nonetheless has trouble learning. If you want to be part of the conversation, call us at 877-372-KIDS. That's 877-372-5437. You can also email us during the show or anytime at info@childhoodmatters.org. Joining us in the studio is Todd Rose, a research scientist with CAST, the Center for Applied Special Technology. He's on the faculty at the Harvard Graduate School of Education, where he teaches a course on educational neuroscience and co-chairs the Summit Institute on Mind, Brain, and Education. His work focuses on the way perception, attention, and working memory interact to shape learning, and on the study of learning disabilities from a dynamic system framework. Todd lectures internationally on topics ranging from the new learning science, learning disabilities, working memory, and the role of neuroscience in 21st century education. And he's the proud father of two sons. Todd Rose, welcome to Childhood Matters.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Really nice to see you this morning. You've been doing a lot of talks around the Bay Area, right?
I have.
Yeah, now you're up early with us. We're lucky. Also joining us is Catherine Ellison, author of one of my favorite books, Buzz, A Year of Paying Attention. She's an investigative journalist, former foreign correspondent, writing consultant, and the author of three previous books. She's the mother of two sons, and she and Todd Rose are working on a book together focusing on neuroscience and education called Hypereducation. Catherine has been on numerous radio and TV shows and speaks at conferences around the country on her understanding of ADHD from the inside out. Catherine Ellison, welcome back to our show.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
You know, I'm excited that you and Todd are working on a new book together. Maybe you could start off telling us a little bit about it and why you ventured into doing this book together.
Sure. During the year that I spent looking at my issues with my son and how we could get on track for a better relationship and how he could start doing better in school, one of the luckiest breaks I had was meeting Todd. I was looking for a guide who could help me understand this baffling world of ADHD, and happened to see him in a video and tracked him down at Harvard. And we just spent hours, we ended up spending hours afterwards on the phone, and he really generously gave me his time to help me through this maze that so many baffled parents have to struggle through alone. So through him, I really learned about how ADHD breaks down into all these different things, for instance, short-term memory problems and processing issues and impulsivity. It's really a grab bag kind of a term. And he's such a great interpreter of all this research that I started asking more about his own life. And he's got a very dramatic story, which he's going to tell you himself, I know. My publisher, after I wrote the book, was really interested and asked him to write a book, and he asked me to collaborate with him.
And you've also had to struggle with the issues around education and what's the right setting for your son, and that's a lot of the focus of what you're going to be writing
this
about.
This book is about, yeah, it's going to be a memoir and a manifesto for Todd. It's his life story, but also will describe some of the real pioneering work that he's doing at Harvard about how to design learning environments that aren't going to squash kids at an early age, but rather help them realize their potential.
Thank you so much. Todd Rose, so I have so much to ask you, but I heard you speak the other night, and I want to start on that personal note. And maybe you could say something about how you made that shift from being a teenager in high school with a 0.9 GPA to a Harvard professor, you know, who is doing this really pioneering work in education and research. It's a very inspiring story.
Yeah, no, just as a start, I'll say, like, thanks for having me. And while I get to be the one to talk about that pioneering work, I'm fortunate to be part of a really, really smart group of people, primarily through the nonprofit that I work with and for, called CAST. And just a lot of smart people who are interested in these same topics we're bringing up about designing better learning environments that work for everyone. So I'm fortunate to be part of a big team of smart people.
Really helps, doesn't
it? Yeah,
it
does. Yeah. It does. And then I get the credit by being on your radio station. As you
said. Yeah. What, you know, here you are, and the, you know, the story we could take hours on, but it's really about not doing well and that shift.
Yeah. So 0.9 GPA, which you have to work really hard to accomplish that. But for me, it was trying to understand myself better, which sounds pretty simple, but it really comes down to that for a long time, people had told me that what they labeled me as ADHD, that my variability was my outcome, essentially. And people would try to treat me as if I was a patient. And I never felt like I had any control over my own life. And people used words like empowerment, but then you realize you can't give people empowerment. Like, it's something I have to have and own myself. And so I found myself in a series of dead-end jobs, working for minimum wage with, you know, my high school sweetheart now is my wife. And I had 12 jobs in the first 2.5 years we were married, and I kept bouncing around jobs. And my father-in-law and other people started saying I was lazy, which was something I'd heard quite a bit.
I bet you did.
And I realized that didn't seem to be the case, that I needed to be challenged and that I had a lot to offer. And in environments where I was constantly challenged, I was pretty darn good at what I did. And it was at that moment that I realized that I needed to take a little more control over my life. And, you know, my dad was a big role in that. My mom played a huge part in that. But it was really coming to terms with my strengths and weaknesses so that I could start to choose better environments for myself and also know the kind of help that I needed in environments that didn't fit.
And when you were in school, say in high school, were you considered bad? Was that a label also besides lazy?
Yes.
Yes.
I liked that label, though.
Yeah.
Because bad meant I was in control.
Right. And again, we often hear people say, I'd much rather be called bad than dumb or stupid. And then you say, well, I'm not succeeding just because I'm a rebel or something, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I remember being a little kid and throwing a rock at a car in front of everyone. So it was a really dumb idea. But and not realizing that I'd even done it. And it was terrifying even as a little kid to realize that I wasn't in control of my behavior all the time. And you realize it's better just to own the experience, to be the kid that's bad, but the kid that's choosing to be bad, rather than keep having to admit that
you have no control.
And I had no idea why. I just seemed to, like, ready, you know, fire, aim kind of thing. And it's terrifying. And I think that a lot of times you just start interpreting the behavior as being really just this kid just doesn't care. And nothing could have been further from the truth. I just wanted to be in control.
And so the impulsivity that comes with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, you know, again, we're not going to a big definition here about what it is because it's such a complex phenomenon, ADHD. But it's the impulsivity that you had that you're describing that often got you in trouble.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you want to add something there?
Yeah, Catherine? Just what's so great about Todd, I think, for this book and for Buzz is that he's able to, just like he just did now, to channel his adolescent self. And so many kids, once they grow up, I think that they just close that door and they, you know, they don't remember any of that. But for me as a mom, and I know for so many other moms who've been inspired by his story, he's very inspiring in being able to both talk about what it really felt like then and having got through it.
Yeah. And one of the things that I know you've told me and I've read in your book Buzz is also your mom was a big part mm-hmm. of that support, and that at some point, I forget the term about love. What was it, showering him with love? Or
well, yeah, I called it in Buzz, I called it bombing him with love.
Bombing him with love. But it was sort of someone really believing you in you, even though I'm sure there were times she was pulling her hair out as well. Mm-hmm. But that support really helps. So I want to open up the phone lines, 1-877-372-KIDS, 877-372-5437. I want to hear from you this morning. If you either have a child who has learning challenges, behavior challenges, want to hear from our guests, we'd love to hear from you this morning. Let's start off with Sarah in Richmond. Good morning, Sarah.
Hi, Rona.
Hi.
Listen, I just want to mention one thing. Something happened to the sound on my phone, and I can hear you, but it's really hard to hear Todd or Catherine in the background. I don't know. Everything was fine, and then all of a sudden the sound went really strange. So
okay.
I just want you to know that.
Good. I'm thinking it might just be your phone, but we'll check it out.
I don't think so, because everything was just fine, and then suddenly just... Well, yeah. I don't know. Maybe it is my phone.
Okay.
Anyway,
so go ahead. We're talking about, you know what we're talking about because you've read Buzz, right?
Yeah, I did. And I love Catherine's book so much. I'm just a huge Catherine fan. And
thank
really
you.
Glad to get to hear you again, Catherine. And also just so pleased to get to hear Todd as well, because I feel like I know him a little bit too, just from Catherine's book. And just it sounds like such a wonderful story, and I have a young son also who is in kindergarten but already on his second school and still really not thriving there, and yet it's hard to get a definitive diagnosis about what's happening. And so I'm just curious to hear from Todd as well about what he would say would be a good learning environment. I find that if I were not a single mom, maybe if I could homeschool my child, that might be the best. But I don't even know if that would be ideal. But I'm just wondering. I find that the public school, where you get a lot of resources, still isn't really supportive in the ways that I'd like. And then private schools are not really an option for other reasons too. And so I just am wondering about what's really important in that.
Yeah, great question.
Let's
tackle that, because you're asking something. Your child is 5, right?
And he just turned 6.
Just turned 6, and so we're tackling that, I think, for young children, starting at a young age, and of course going through the spectrum, a good learning environment for someone with that kind of neurodiversity. Let's go into that. Yeah.
Sure. So, thank you for your question. For me, like especially at a young age, kids come into school, almost all kids enjoy learning. They have this beautiful curiosity that really we're just trying to stay out of squashing would be a nice start, right? But the thing is that sometimes we talk a lot about resources, and I from my perspective, resources are wonderful, but you can do a lot with more of the emotional kind of support and a really good teacher, a teacher that cares, especially at that young age. It's largely about making sure that they feel welcome and safe, and they can explore and they can make mistakes. And, you know, I know a lot of wonderful teachers in very, very poor schools that just do fantastic jobs. And so the thing is that I believe, especially for kids like me, who were bound to be a little more active, I guess would be the best word, having a teacher who understood me as a kid, you know, and makes all the difference. And I had some of those, you know, I also had some that didn't. But I feel like at a young age, it's better to just have this sort of emotional component there that allows them to explore, because they're still developing. They're still even, you know.
And, you know, Todd, you say that, and yet we know that already starting in kindergarten, first grade, the teachers feel this pressure to be having long circle times and teaching kids. And, you know, you talked about in the talk the other night, you talked about stress and how the cortisol levels, when they go up, learning starts to get worse. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think a lot of parents are facing, is that, you know, it's true. A teacher with who listens and cares really makes a difference. But I think what's important about what you're saying is it's not as much the resources, but the person. Is that?
Yeah. And exactly right. So the issues, especially at an early age, around what we've learned from the neurosciences about the effects of stress on the brain. And I have to say, I'm kind of a latecomer to this whole, the importance of emotion, believe it or not. I tend to be more of a cognitive scientist. But it's remarkable what we've learned in the last, you know, 6-7 years about what emotions do in the brain and how important they are to learning, and particularly the negative consequences of stress and what we would call a threat response, which is very primitive. You know, you think you're in trouble, you think you're in an environment that's threatening, your body organizes itself. You know, you've had the classic, we call it fight or flight.
Yeah.
And we see these kids in classrooms that they perceive as threatening. And when that happens, learning's all but over.
Sarah, do you have your son in a space where he feels safe and competent?
I guess in a short-term way, we're in a public school situation, and actually there happens to be a volunteer aide who's wonderful, but that's only going to be for another month or two. And then, you know, then we're really left at this point of looking at the public school starting in September in a place that's going to be a large class size and, you know, teachers that are maybe very experienced but also somewhat jaded and maybe not putting in, you know, just not even able to put in that kind of time and attention and caring and loving.
Yeah. Catherine, did you go through this as a mama?
Definitely, and I'm still going through it. I mean, there's a real lack in the Bay Area that I've seen of good schools that really understand what we're talking about here now. And partly, I'm sure it's just a system. You know, it's nobody's fault. It's the system. It's budget cuts. It's overcrowded classrooms. It's more pressure on teachers. But I did manage to interview the head of a really visionary school the other day in San Diego at High Tech High, it's called. It's a charter school. And his name is Larry Rosenstock. And the school is – I described the school in Buzz. We're going to write about it again in Hyper Education, because it's a place where there's this vision that's very sophisticated compared to so many schools. They do care about the emotional relations. And Larry, the head of the school, said that if he could do anything in education, he would eliminate tenure for teachers, make sure that you really get people who care and are very committed, and eliminate the standardized tests, which cause so much pressure on both teachers and students.
Yeah, those and you're working on this, Todd, too. And so, you know, we just have about a minute here. Sarah, I want to say that, you know, the research and the things that are happening, they don't help you right now in the moment with your son. But what you could keep doing is trying to find that teacher who has compassion, who likes high energy boys, because there are some teachers who do and some don't. And it sounds like you're the kind of parent who will keep doing her research. So I appreciate your question. Keep listening. And best of luck. In a moment, we'll be talking more about schools and kids with ADHD.
Childhood Matters.
Helpful advice, inspiration, and resources for parents.
Get involved. Call 1-877-372-KIDS. Here's this week's Childhood Matters community calendar with events for parents and kids. Opportunity Junction in Bay Point is having free English second language courses at the Bay Point Career Center Thursday, April 21st, 6:30 to 7:30. For more information, call 925-252-2331. That's 925-252-2331. Get rewarded for helping out the planet at the Seymour Center in Santa Cruz this week, April 19th to the 23rd. Free admission is given to those who arrive using alternative transportation. For more information, call 831-459-3800. That's 831-459-3800. Kids get in for free all day at the Charles M. Schultz Museum this Saturday, April 23rd. For more information, call 707-579-4452. That's 707-579-4452. Attention parents and kids, Wild Care Summer Camp in San Rafael is now open for registration and is filling up fast. The program, running from June 6th till August 19th, will teach kids about environmental knowledge and values. For more information, call 415-453-1000. That's 415-453-1000. Free Day is this week at the California Academy of Sciences in San Francisco, Wednesday, April 20th, beginning at 9:30. For more information, call 415-379-8000. That's 415-379-8000. Does your child need help with his or her homework? Then get free tutoring at the San Lorenzo branch of the Alameda County Library this Monday, April 18th, 3:30 to 5:30. For more information, call 510-670-6283. That's 510-670-6283. Don't forget to check out the OMUD exhibit at the D. Young Museum in San Francisco all the way until May 6th. The exhibition is free every Friday, 5 to 8:45. For more information, call 415-750-3600. That's 415-750-3600. For additional information on events, call 510-663-5437. And to submit information, email info@childhoodmatters.org.
This is Nurse Rona letting you know that you can connect with Childhood Matters anytime on Facebook, Twitter, and iTunes. Now you can get the latest tips, resources, book recommendations, and share your thoughts with other parents and become part of our virtual community. As always, you can sign up for our podcasts and download past shows, community reports, and interviews. Visit childhoodmatters.org to learn more. That's childhoodmatters.org. And tell your friends.
We continue with Childhood Matters, brought to you in part by your local First Five.
Join in the conversation at 1-877-372-KIDS.
Here's more with Nurse Rona on Childhood Matters.
Today we're talking with Todd Rose. He's a research scientist with the Center for Applied Special Technology, CAST, and a faculty member at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. And also Catherine Ellison. She's an investigative journalist and the author of many books, including her recent one, Buzz, A Year of Paying Attention. And we're talking with you about kids with ADHD, learning differences, neurodiversity, and education. Todd, you know, Sarah brought up this question of, you know, like, how do you, the systems aren't changing yet quick enough about how education is for kids. Now, there are some great schools, there are some great teachers, but kids often find themselves in classrooms where there are teachers who don't understand the way they are, the way their brain works, what they need. Any thoughts about that? What do you do?
Sure. I mean, so there's like good news, bad news, right? So the good news is that parents have a lot more control and can have bigger effects on their kids than they even imagine. The bad news is it's not always how they imagine. And the bad news is also that there's not a simple answer. Right. And, you know, it would be nice if you always had a perfect teacher, but that's not going to happen for any kid.
Right.
And the good news is it doesn't have to for them to have a good outcome. And so I think from a perspective of a parent, understanding something pretty straightforward that we know from neuroscience of learning, which is that when we talk about a kid's differences, neurodiversity, it's an important thing to understand. I mean, we're all unbelievably different, all of us. And those differences only become a problem or a talent when we start putting him in contexts that fit or don't fit. And so the thing is as a parent, first of all, you need to be an expert on your little kid.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's where understanding their temperament is so important.
And the thing is that you walk a fine line between blaming kids for everything, but also excusing all of their behavior. And I can appreciate the position that, especially like my mom was always in, where everyone seemed to come down on me for everything, some of which was my fault and some of which was not. And so she always felt in the position of defending me a lot. And I can appreciate that when you see your kid getting kind of beat up at school, basically, you know, literally and figuratively, to want to just protect them all the time. And that's great. And it's good to know you can protect your kid, and they can know you're on their side, and you can still expect things out of them.
Challenge
them. Yeah. Kids, you know, coddling them isn't the answer, but supporting them and challenging them is. And like Sarah had asked before, so there's a lot you can do. So let's say you're in a classroom that's just not working, you know, that year. Then you have to understand that you creating a home life that is a safe environment. You know, my mom worked really hard to know when she saw that the world was kind of coming down on me to say, okay, you know what, for this time period, what he needs is a place where he can come home and be himself. And that meant I could act. But I needed a place where I felt safe. And when the school environment was providing that, she was able to be a little more disciplinary.
Yeah. And so the child who gets that bad report card and then comes home and then the parent is yelling at them and stressing them out even more, that tends to make kids spin more and not actually do better.
Yeah.
And yet at the same time, there are consequences sometimes for your behavior, but it has to be with a lot of love.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, let me give you one example where I felt like, you know, my dad taught me something. And I think this is something that a lot of parents should keep in mind for kids like me. We brought up impulsivity before. Yeah. I mean, that was definitely, you know, nice growing up. I was impulsive and that got me in a lot of trouble. By the way, now we call it spontaneity, right? And people
right.
like it. But
as an adult.
Yeah. When it doesn't wreck people's lives. But, you know, one of the things that I would do was I would steal things on impulse. I would do things that weren't quite right. And often we come down on the kid and we want to try to say, like, what were you thinking? Well, I wasn't thinking. That was the problem. But my dad figured out that it's not what you do right there when you make a mistake. It's what do you do next? And you realize the mistakes are the chance to build character.
Right.
And realizing your kid, the impulsive kid is going to make more mistakes like that. But if they create this fear of ever making those mistakes, then they're not going to stick with it long enough to say, what do I do next?
That's a great example. Catherine, I bet you could add to that.
Well, I just want to say, in addition to being educated about your own child, it's really important for parents to be educated about what their rights are in the educational system and what can and can't be done for their kids. While we're waiting for these wonderful changes in education reform that seem to be on the horizon, where these more supports will be built into schools, parents just, I think, have no choice but to get educated and be empowered as advocates for your child at the school. I didn't know when my son was having his worst time that there was a lot more I could have asked for. I didn't know that I could have had him tested by the school at their expense, so we went to great expense to have him tested. I didn't know that once he had a diagnosis that we could actually demand more support than we were getting.
Yeah.
So it just behooves parents to bone up on this.
Start out with that student study team meeting and go from there, for sure. Let's take more calls. 1-877-372-KIDS. We're going to talk now with Claudia from American Canyon. Good morning, Claudia.
Good morning, Nurse Verna.
How's it going for you?
Good, good. I am listening to the conversation here, and what Todd is saying is exactly right. Everything about being your child's support. My child was diagnosed at age 5 with ADHD, and I was pretty much his aide for the first 3 years at elementary school.
You were his aide, you said, Claudia?
Yes. I was with him by his side and just making sure he was, you know, staying fit and concentrating and doing the work he had to do and all that kind of stuff. That helped him a lot, you know, finish his work and concentrate and all that stuff. But as I learned more about it and about ADHD and his behaviors and all that, we did a couple of things with his teacher. One of the things was that we moved him closer to the teacher and to the to where she's spending all the time, you know, teaching. And the other thing was we have this have him go for errands every time he starts fidgeting.
Yeah, that's a great strategy. Is like use his energy for something positive. You know, have him go to the office, have him write on the board, things like that. So you learned by being in the classroom, but I think you brought up the point, too, about parent education. Like, parents need to learn about what Todd said it, and I'm saying it again. What does my child need? What might his brain be like? And how old is your child now?
He's going to be 12, and he is excelling in all classes, and he's doing great everywhere, and, you know, classroom setting and stuff. So with that, I think that move him closer to the teacher and have him that errand, go to errand to nowhere, you know, to go to the office or to bring something to the next teacher, that just gives him the time to stretch and to
yes.
walk around. And then he comes back and just and he's focused on what he has to do again. Rather, and so we're I try to concentrate on the positive rather than the negative.
Good. That's and wonderful,
just,
Claudia.
You know, just say, instead of, because if we don't send him to those errands and things like that, then he'll be fidgeting and all you hear is, don't do that, don't move, don't.
That's right. You know. All that negativity. You know, I want to ask Todd, you know, I know a teacher who would send a kid out to do laps when they were getting restless and come back. I'm just wondering about also the stimulation of chemicals in the brain, sometimes just by moving or doing exercise, right?
Sure, absolutely. And, you know, the funny thing is that most of this stuff is not bad for most kids,
right?
Like, I mean, since when did we figure out that sitting in a classroom in a chair for an hour at a time was ever good for learning? You know, that's not how our brains operate. And I understand the practical constraints on classrooms, but if I was going to say anything to teachers, I would think about clearly, you know, think about your learning goal and realize how flexible can I be in the means that I will allow my kids to achieve that. And it doesn't mean letting everything just go crazy, but a little bit of fidgeting, a little bit of getting up once in a while with some constraints, you'll see remarkable
makes all
difference.
The difference. You know, I was at a school called the East Bay School for Boys that just opened up. Well, they have all boys, and it's a middle school. And the first week, they had them building their own desks, learning math, learning science. And what a wonderful thing, you know, like that's so perfect. So I think no matter, you know, what you said, if you make a classroom that would work well with a kid with attention deficit disorder, it'll be good for everyone.
Yeah, that's, I think, probably the coolest thing we've learned from the neurosciences of learning and learning variability in the last 5 years is that these kids aren't different in some qualitative way. They're part of a continuum of ability and disability. And what we've realized is when we attend to those needs and we make sure environments take care of the full range of neurodiversity that exists, we get amazing benefits for those kids, so-called average students. You know, you get innovation from dealing with variability. And I would just like to say, like, the thing is when you look at the research on what predicts learning outcomes for kids with ADHD, it turns out to be the same things that every kid needs, the same predictors. It's just you got to bring your A game as a teacher with these kids.
Yes.
You know, they won't muddle through.
That's right. Well, thank you so much, Claudia, for your comments and for being the mama bear that you are and keep advocating. I have a book that I want to send you. It's called Staying Connected to Your Teenager, since your child is heading into those years. Mike Riera has a really good book. So we'll send that to you. Have a really good day, Claudia.
Great. Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Childhood Matters, brought to you in part by your local First Five.
Pick up the phone and get involved. Call Childhood Matters now at 1-877-372-KIDS. That's 1-877-372-KIDS.
You know, Catherine, I think you probably see also at times with Buzz, your son, and when he's done physical activity, how that helps with his focus.
Definitely. And it's not just for boys either. There's all this research that shows that and in schools, behavioral problems will go down and academic success goes up. I mean, it's just really a no-brainer. But for girls as well, I remember sitting in a classroom pinching myself because I was going to sleep. You know? I mean, it's.
Yes.
Do you remember that too?
Yeah. A little space cadet over there in the corner.
Right. So we're not, as girls, we're not necessarily acting out and throwing stink bombs or anything like that, but we're suffering just as much.
Very internally. And some girls do also do the impulsive stuff. But for me, it was like spacing out. And then I couldn't wait to my dance class, or I couldn't wait to do something in class where you got to stand up,
right.
You know, and I still feel that way as
Me
an adult.
Too.
Let's take another call. We have Shantae with us from San Jose this morning. Hi, Shantae.
Good morning.
Good morning. You have a question or a comment?
I just have a comment.
Yeah.
I have an 8-year-old daughter that was diagnosed with ADHD and ODD.
That's oppositional defiant disorder, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And in December, she moved to a county classroom from a general education classroom, and it's working so much better for her.
What kind of classroom did she get moved to?
A county classroom.
What's that mean?
Special education.
What's a county classroom?
A county classroom, special education.
Oh, for a special ed class. And it's a smaller group of students?
Yes, it is.
You know, and it's an interesting thing. Some kids really thrive because the special education class might have a smaller group and it might have a teacher who's more trained. And other kids don't do so well because of the stigma or that it doesn't fit well with them. But you're saying that your child is actually doing better in that class.
Yes, she is.
And do you know why she's doing better in that class?
I think because it's a smaller classroom and there's a teacher with also two aides, and then there's a therapist that's there once a week.
And does she enjoy learning there?
She does, yes.
Okay, Todd, what do you think?
Well, what I find really interesting when I look at what we've learned about learning, and particularly about natural variability, it's been my experience that, and I'll just say it, I think special educators tend to know more about learning than regular educators. In some sense, because they have to deal with the individual. They get it. They get that the average kind of things don't usually work. And so they have to be effective, they have to understand individual kids and they have to take that step to reach them. And I think one of the most unfortunate things that goes on in public schools right now is, number one, that regular ed teachers often think they can't teach kids with ADHD or other learning disabilities. And they also don't believe that special educators have a lot to teach them. And I would disagree.
That's a really good point. It's a really good point because it's good that you were able to find a way to get your child into an environment that's a good fit. And in a little while on the show, we'll hear students at a school here in Oakland that's a smaller school, smaller learning environment. They'll talk about what they like. But Shantae, you know, my guess is you had to do a lot of advocacy, and now you could see your child going uphill. But I really think that what Todd just said is that if all teachers could learn some of those skills that special education teachers know, it could make a huge difference.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your call. And, you know, I'm going to send you, would you like, you? It looks like you have four kids?
Yeah.
You have four kids. Well, I'm going to send you some tickets to the Monterey Bay Aquarium, Shantae.
Oh, great. Thank
because
you.
I think family trips and outdoors and having fun and going someplace good is really a great education for everyone.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. And, you know, I just want to say in terms of kids with ADHD, very often they try and get an IEP, an individual education plan, and they may be too bright, too smart, and then they say, no, you don't need this plan because your ADHD isn't impairing your learning because now they're learning average, and that's okay. And so I just want parents listening to know that if you have ADHD, it doesn't mean you'll necessarily be able to get any kind of special services.
Or that you even need it.
Or even,
right?
That's right. That's right. So we'll keep talking about this. We'd love to hear from you. And in a moment, we'll take your call.
and get involved.
Call now at 1-877-372-KIDS.
You're listening to Childhood Matters.
More with Rona Renner after this.
Did you know that in San Francisco and the East Bay, one in every five children has been diagnosed with asthma? In fact, asthma is the most common reason kids are hospitalized in the Bay Area. At kidsdata.org, you can learn more about issues that affect the health and well-being of children in the Bay Area. Kidsdata.org provides easy-to-access information and resources for those who influence kids' lives. You can find data by region, topic, or demographic, such as ethnicity or age. Visit kidsdata.org to learn more. This message is brought to you by the Lucille Packard Foundation for Children's Health.
Good reading habits start early. In fact, flashcards and fancy games aren't necessary for building early literacy skills. All that is needed are books, your child, and you. Young children who listen to stories with their families are better prepared for school and life. Here are some tips to help select books for young children. Babies like board books that are brightly colored with photos of other children and familiar objects. Choose books with different textures that babies can explore through touch. Also, toddlers like books that show characters doing familiar things like playing and smiling. Pick books with only a few words per page and stories that rhyme. And for preschoolers, read predictable books so your child will begin to recognize words and phrases while having fun saying them with you. Don't hesitate to reread favorite books. For more information on programs for young children, contact your local Bay Area First Five County Commission by visiting www.firstfivekids.org/bay. Brought to you by your local First Five.
Childhood Matters. I'm Nurse Rona. The number of overweight children in America has tripled since 1980. This is mainly because of unhealthy eating and a lack of physical activity. When a child is overweight, they can be at risk for developing health problems like type 2 diabetes and emotional problems from being teased. Children learn by example. Adults play an important role by eating healthy foods and making physical activity a part of family life. You can limit junk food, provide healthy snacks like fruits and vegetables, pretzels, and yogurt. Give them plenty of water and let children leave food on their plate if they're not hungry. Go for family walks, bike rides, take the stairs, and limit TV and computer time. If you're concerned about your child's weight, talk to your doctor. And when children say their friends can drink soda whenever they want, remind them that it's your job to help them grow up healthy. This Childhood Matters health tip is made possible by a grant from Kaiser Permanente, Northern California.
We all aspire to live happy and fulfilled lives and raise our children with these values. But the stresses we face day to day can get in our way. Find support with Nurse Rona's podcast, Happiness Matters, with Dr. Christine Carter, author of Raising Happiness, where you'll learn about the science and art of cultivating these values and passing them on to the children in your lives. This podcast is available on our website or on iTunes. For more information, visit us at childhoodmatters.org.
My darling, be home soon. It's not just these few hours, but I've been waiting since I traveled for the great relief of having you to talk to.
We continue with Childhood Matters, brought to you in part by your local First Five.
Join in the conversation at 1-877-372-KIDS.
Here's more with Nurse Rona on Childhood Matters.
Today we're talking with Todd Rose, a research scientist with the Center for Applied Special Technology and a faculty member at the Harvard Graduate School of Education, and Catherine Ellison, an investigative journalist and author of many books, including her great book, Buzz, A Year of Paying Attention. Let's take a listen now to what some youth have to say about their learning environment.
I'm associate producer Lorenzo Plazola, and I'm talking to some teens at Bay Hill High School about better learning environments for kids with ADHD. What do you think is the best school environment for someone with ADHD?
I would think a smaller environment where you can have more one-on-one time with the teacher.
I think it should be calm, not a lot of people, and not a lot of things that could get somebody distracted.
Definitely a smaller class, nothing too big, about 10 students, 15.
One where the teachers are more devoted to helping you sit down and not get distracted and help you do your work.
What do the teachers specifically do here at Bay Hill that make the classes more engaging?
They use bright colors like on the whiteboard and stuff when they're teaching and to keep our attention, and the classes are definitely smaller so everybody gets like their questions answered.
They're more hands-on. They can talk to you. They help you a lot more than public school teachers. They're nice, cheerful, happy?
We actually get physical with the activities we do, and like biology, we'll be learning about genetics, and we'll all like get up and like move around as if we're a gene or something like that.
And how does this compare to your preschool experiences?
The other teachers that I had, they just teach you and just go on with their lives, you know what I mean?
The teacher never really paid attention to the kids that didn't understand, and so I always got left behind.
They wouldn't help you at all. Like, if they saw you distracted, they wouldn't really care. They just tell you to get back to work.
How do your parents help create like a good homework environment at home?
My grandma, she helps me with all my homework. She checks in on me every day just to give me a little nudge in the right direction.
Either they'll just like turn off the internet so I just can't like go on Facebook or something like that. So I just have to sit down and do it and I can't get distracted.
I'd always sit downstairs at the table so that I wouldn't be upstairs kind of just doing whatever I wanted and getting distracted.
I guess they'll just ask me if, you know, if you need some help with your homework, just let me know, or they'll just check in every now and then. But they usually try to give me the independence doing my own work.
And what advice would you give to teachers and schools out there on how to develop a more effective teaching structure?
I think they should listen to the students. Say if a student has a question, don't just look at them, give them a really brief answer, and then just walk away. Actually sit down and talk with them and work it out with them.
Smaller classrooms, because the kids need more one-on-one time, a lot more hands-on learning.
I would say definitely listen to the students that are in your class and hear what they have to say about how they learn, because it's not necessarily that kids with learning differences have an actual problem. It's just that we learn differently.
For Childhood Matters, I'm Lorenzo Plazola.
Thank you, Lorenzo, and thank you so much to the youth at Bay Hill School in Oakland. It's a real good school where it sounds like the kids are getting a lot of what they need. Catherine Ellison, what stood out for you in listening to them?
Just that the students seemed more empowered and, to use that word, about what they actually needed. They understood how important it was to have a good relationship with a teacher and also to have the smaller classrooms. I mean, it's really such a pity that classrooms are so crowded now, because teachers simply have to teach to the average, and the kids who are way smarter and bored, and the kids who are struggling, they're really the victims of it.
Yeah. What about you? What did you hear from this, Todd?
Yeah, I actually liked the something similar that Kathy just said, that the kids did sound empowered, and that empowerment, it's clearly coming from inside, that they're not just repeating something that's been told to them. And you give kids real opportunities to have some control over their own lives, and that success breeds success. And when they start to understand what they need, and what they need to be able to succeed, and they're able to ask for it in advance, I've found that teachers are quite accommodating to that usually. You know, it's kind of this chicken or egg, but like helping kids to understand themselves,
yeah,
and the environments that work and don't.
Yeah.
Is like the most important thing in my mind.
Right. It makes me think about kids who have sensory issues, you know, kids with sensory integration problems, high sensitivity. It's like if parents can help the child learn that, you know, when things are getting overwhelming, maybe you need to go put the headphones on and listen to a book on tape to get you back to your center. And then the child's able to say something to the teacher at some point, like, I need to kind of go sit over there for a little while. But it takes a while to get to the place where a child is able to do that.
Right. And this is why, in my opinion, particularly for the younger kids, I think we fail a lot of teachers by not providing them with up-to-date information about learning. And it's a really hard job that they have. And most of them, I'm impressed with how hard they work. And we need to do a better job, and myself included, in making sure they have the most up-to-date information.
That's right. Exactly. And I also think what I heard from the youth was that the teachers were nice. They were small environments. They were physical. And that the teachers listen to them, too. So it's that. And then I know, like at Bay Hill, there are high expectations, but they're realistic expectations. And so that's also the key. So parents and teachers working together and youth, it's that three-pronged stool. You need everyone involved in that regard.
Yeah, and your point real quick about that kids want to be challenged. I mean, kids don't – you don't learn if you're not being challenged.
It's
that's
right.
We want precision in that challenge.
Yeah.
You know, irrelevant challenges are just barriers.
Right. So I want to ask you, you gave a talk yesterday at the Penn Conference about variability and context. Can you explain that a little bit? We have about, you know, 4 or 5 minutes left.
Sure. So, it was a really enjoyable time to go talk to this group. But there is this real revolution that's happened in the learning sciences recently. And it's changing the way that we're capable of designing environments that really do adapt to kids and that fit the widest range of kids. And it's, for how much I struggled in school, and particularly how much I struggled with math, I hate the fact that it comes down to this equation that we've created, which is, you know, anytime you want to think about an outcome, whatever it is, behavior or learning, you have to understand it's always variability times the context. There's not just because I'm impulsive. You know, that's the way we treat it sometimes. My variability equals some outcome. And parents are told, they pick up a book and it says, oh, your kid has ADHD, here's what's going to happen. And it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. But it's not true.
Give me an example of variability and context equal outcome.
Sure, sure. So for me, you look at something like impulsivity, right? So you say, well, what does that mean? And it depends, right? So it depends on a lot of contextual factors, including, is it something that I do that where I have the money to be able to, which I've done all the time with my kids, then we call it spontaneous, right? If it's reckless, like I actually bought a car on a lunch break when I was on welfare because they told me I could afford it and it was repossessed like 10 months later, that's reckless. But it's coming from the same kind of initial variability. A quick aside one is the issue of novelty seeking, the intolerance of boredom. It both leads down a negative path to like jail and drug addiction, but it also is one of the biggest components of curiosity.
Right.
And curiosity is the best predictor of almost every learning outcome you could imagine.
Think of the entrepreneurs mm-hmm. who have ADHD. Yeah. Their curiosity is that same thing. And also, they don't like to be bored.
Right. And there's nothing wrong with that if we harness
channel it.
Yeah. And so just briefly, when we look at that novelty seeking, that intolerance of boredom, what determines which path it takes, the dark side or the bright side, is largely about context. And one big thing, do your contexts value curiosity? Does the school you're in value curiosity? If it doesn't, your novelty seeking will come out in more darker ways.
That's really important. The value of what you can do, your strengths mm-hmm. in that sense. That sounds really, really important. Well, as we're kind of wrapping up here, Catherine Ellison, what do you want to add about, you're working on this book, you've had your own experience as a parent. You continue to have your experience as a parent. Maybe a final word for parents who are listening, struggling also with finding an education that works for their child.
I guess just to say that we're coming up on Mother's Day in a couple of weeks, and mothers always used to joke that we have to be chauffeurs, nutritional consultants, financial planners, and now the burden or the challenge, if however you like to view it, is that we also really have to start really educating ourselves about what's going on in education, what's possible. And the more we can see that as an opportunity for to learn and grow, the more that we'll pass on that positive flavor to our kids.
And I want to tell people, if you go to our homepage at childhoodmatters.org, you'll see Catherine's book right up there, Buzz. Click on it. Buy a copy. It's a fabulous book. You'll cry, you'll laugh, and you'll get a lot of good information. I love your honesty, Catherine.
Thank you.
And also the resources that you have. And you also connected us with Todd. So I want to thank you so much. A final word, Todd, and how people can find out about the CAS program?
Yeah, CAS.org.
CAST.org.
And I will say just briefly that, yes, to build on what Kathy said, look, from the parent standpoint, the mothers, when we know that it's variability times context equals your outcome, that means there are no experts on your kid except for you. There are people that can be expert about variability, but they don't know the context.
Todd Rose, thank you so much. And if you want to hear more about ADHD, there's an interview with Steve Henshaw, Dr. Steve Henshaw, that Felsha did. It'll be up on our website tomorrow. Thank you to our guests. Thank you to Felsha Zuschlag and Lorenza Plazola, our producers, my kids, Pei, Mara, Matt, and Karina. I love you. This is Rona saying goodbye until next week. And remember, spend time with your child. And don't forget to take good care of yourself. Childhood Matters, and so do you.
You've been listening to Childhood Matters.
Produced by Collins Media Services and presented by the nonprofit Interactive Parenting Media.
We are family. Give everybody a seat.
Join us again for Childhood Matters. Find out more at childhoodmatters.org.